Welcome everyone to the very first episode of Maze Pants, a little collaboration between Blackheart Gold Pants and Maze and Brew. I am Maze and Brew Dave. He is Hawkeye State, and we are here to waste a half hour of your time and talk a little college football along the way. Hawkeye State, what's going on, man?
Hey, just living the dream. Waiting for the flood to come.
I understand that the cyclones are out there, filling sandbags, doing something positive. What about the Hawkeyes? Are you guys just kind of sitting back there picking your nose?
Yeah, we don't have any flooding in Iowa City this time around. See, here's the difference between Iowa and Iowa State, and Iowa State fans take note, as if you're actually listening to a Big Ten podcast. when Iowa City flooded 2 years ago, Iowa State fans took enormous glee in, like, the destruction of property. When Ames...
Is this like the people in Botswana laughing at the people in Rwanda?
This is exactly how it is, yes. And in Ames, this happens, and Iowa goes, well, hey, how can we help? Because we're above this. These petty squabbles are not really our game.
I've read your site. That's not true.
No, that's definitely not true.
Not even in the slightest.
Not even close to true. That might be the biggest lie I've ever told, and I'm a lawyer.
I've done it under oath. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
So we've also got a couple other fun things that are going on. You seem to be losing running backs as often as we seem to be losing cornerbacks. What the hell is going on with Brandon Wager?
Depending on who you read, either he has decided to go to Burma like Jay Peterman on the Seinfeld show.
He's like in the Truman Show. That could be good as well.
That works too. Or, he's touring Europe, staying in hostels. No one's really quite sure, to be completely honest. we've been trying to avoid speculation. Essentially, all we really seem to know is that he's still in Iowa City somewhere and that something's going on, but we're not really entirely certain what. Now, most players would never get away with this unless they had the coach's permission to begin with. And the fact that we haven't heard anything from Ferentz as to him being kicked off the team or him being suspended or anything like that makes me think that this was probably condoned to a certain extent by the coaching staff. But for how long, I don't know. My guess is that if he's not back by the end of the week, and we're recording on Thursday, so there's not a whole lot of time left for that, that there could be some serious repercussions.
Oh, well, maybe Ferentz said, hey, go to Amsterdam, find yourself.
Yeah.
Come back. He's a pretty hip guy.
He's down with that. He's all about, personal achievement, personal enlightenment. That seems to be really his kind of thing. that in the old school punt formation, which we were talking about the other night when I was talking about the Morehouse, is Iowa might be the only team left that still runs, like, the full 10 across punt formation.
And I really wish everyone else would go back to it. This funky three people standing in front of the punter thing is really kind of throwing me off.
Yeah.
It's not football. It's rugby.
It needs
to stop right now. But
speaking of chaos, what's the deal in Ann Arbor with Tate Forcier and all of his newfound enemies on the team?
Hell if I know at this point. I mean, everybody I've talked to seems to say, Denard's just outworking them. Maybe that's just a huge compliment for Denard. Maybe Tate just hasn't been able to match that type of intensity. But there's a part of me that also says, you know what, Tate Forcier, he blew out his labrum earlier against Iowa. And, I mean, the kid carried us to four wins early before and injured himself doing it. So I'm inclined to cut him a little bit of slack. But, I think a lot of that, as Troy Wolfolk said at his Big Ten Media Days, I mean, I was apparently sitting there when he said it. I just don't have it on recording. But, he basically said, look, I mean, we expect everybody to be there. And for me, it's somewhat troubling that you've got your senior leader cornerback calling out your sophomore presumed starting quarterback. But there's also a part of me that says, we haven't had anybody on the defense in the last 5 or 6 years who would actually come out and, call people out in private or in public and demand that everybody was on the same page. And the one thing I got out of Wolfuck, that I got out of Mundros, and I got out of Schilling at Big Ten Media Days, is that there is no dissent in the locker room. Everybody's on the same page. Everybody knows what's going on. And while Schilling didn't say what Wolfuck said, everybody said how impressed they were with Denard. I didn't hear anybody volunteer anything on Forcier. And maybe I'm reading too much into that, but the onus is on Forcier to prove himself that he is going to work as hard as Robinson has.
And that's given how Forcier played early last year, that really surprises me. I felt that he was an absolutely terrifying player for the first half of last season, right up until the injury against Iowa. I mean, I thought he really seemed to be
crushing, where Adrian Claiborne tried to push him into China.
Right. But that's just what Adrian Claiborne does. And half the time he succeeds.
He's like a 300-pound human lawn dart.
That up back that he took out to get to the block punt on Penn State, we never saw that guy again.
That was because he ate him. He ate him on the way to the punter, then ate the football, and then regurgitated it in the end zone.
That's
a killer whale.
That's exactly, yes. He's terrifying. He is an absolutely terrifying man.
He's shorter than me, though. He's shorter than you. That's the thing that throws me off. Like, he's three something, moves like a cheetah, but, I like to think I got about 2 or 3 inches on him.
Yeah, well, it's all about height and reach. Seeing if you can, work the jab. Work the jab.
I'm working on it. I've been doing my Billy Blanks tapes, so we'll see what happens with that.
You were at Media Days this year, right?
I was indeed.
Was this your first time?
No, this is actually my second time. It's kind of strange going there the second time. You know, you're an old hackneyed member of the media.
And you wear a little like fedora with a press thing in the brim?
No. This year I actually toned down my clown outfit. I didn't go with the big rainbow wig this time, but I did have the big shoes and the twirling bow tie. I got not as many looks as last year. I guess they're used to the bloggers now.
I guess so. What's your impression of Media Day? Is it just a giant, ridiculous spectacle, or is there actual news made?
That's a question I really can't answer, because from the Michigan side, a lot of the professional media, the people that were covering it for the newspapers, definitely went in there with their own agenda and definitely went in there with questions that they were basically just trying to plug into a story that they'd already written. A lot of it was about the pending NCAA investigation. Is do you see, does Rodriguez have any outward signs of being frustrated? Is, do you ever see him getting down? Does he express his feelings to you in the middle of the night? And at a certain point, I'm just like, talk football. And that's one of the things that I really appreciated about our upcoming guest, Adam Rittenberg. He went in there and asked questions about, about football players, about football schemes. Same thing with Tim Sullivan from MGo Blog. I like to think that I asked, direct questions on players and personnel. And it's just frustrating when you have people asking questions that they've been asking for the entire summer, when they have access to these guys every day.
Yeah.
And they're asking the same damn question over and over again. What? But other than that, Joe Pa is old. Mark D'Antonio looked like he was constipated. Kirk Ferentz kind of sat there with this big Cheshire Cat grin kind of on his face, kind of fading in and out.
That's about what he does every time, yeah.
And Bill Lynch was really, really excited. He didn't really know about what, but he was excited about something.
Okay, question. Did Bill Lynch at any point spit and or throw out his gum?
No, not yet. I'm hoping that will happen again this year, and he'll throw it at the Rock, because they have a Rock that they have to defend.
Right, the Rock must be defended.
You know what the weird thing was? I met Ron Zook in the elevator, and part of me's thinking,
Wait. You met Ron Zook in an elevator.
I met Ron. We got on the elevator together to go up to it was the second floor for it, and I'm thinking to myself, I make so much fun of you. It's painful. And I'm thinking to myself, wow, I'm that jackass that spends his entire day making fun of you. And I'm looking at Ron Zook, and I'm thinking to myself, he's, 15, 20 years older than me. He could beat the living hell out of me. I mean, it wouldn't even be a contest. He would break me in half. And I just kind of stick my hand out and go, hey, coach, you know, amazing bird, Dave. You know, real pleasure to meet you. Big fan. I'm just lying through my teeth because I'm thinking to myself, there's no way he's going to know who I am. But I'm just like, okay, well, I'll dig my own grave.
Well, you know, we've never gone. We've always sent our correspondent, Bob Zook, Ron Zook's brother.
Is he the one with the goatee that looks like with MS painted on?
It's exactly what it is.
Yeah. He was all over the place.
Oh, yeah. Well, and he spends most of his time out in the parking lot drinking Old Mill. This year he didn't really even make it in. He did ask one question of Bob, and it was, why won't you call me? Bob and Ron don't have the best of relationships. It all stems back to when Bob lost his sense of smell and Ron had to take care of him for so many years.
The Zook Diaries. So this is actually starting to sound a lot like the Jimmy Carter, Billy Carter kind of thing.
It's exactly what it is, yeah. If Billy had an El Camino, it's exactly what it would be like.
And for you younger listeners, both of you, Jimmy Carter was a president. It was a very, very interesting time. You know, the one thing I will say is that every one of those coaches are very accessible. They're very approachable. All the players were great. I mean, Adrian Claiborne must have had, you know, 50 or 60 people huddled around him at one point or another. And he was just big smile on his face answering all the questions. You know, I mean, you looked at all the different Thaddeus Gibson was, you know, he was a class act at Ohio State. Not Thaddeus Gibson, Cameron Hayward. I'm an idiot.
Yeah, Thaddeus Gibson is definitely not a class act.
Yeah. but, I mean, you know, all the kids there were really good kids. And I have to say that the people at the Big Ten and at the Big Ten Network that put it on did a very good job and were very, very accommodating. And, you know, and what really was nice is that there were a lot of people from SBN there. There were a lot of people from different blogs that had come and had started getting involved. So it's nice to see, for those of us that kind of cover this as a hobby but cover it, you know, fairly seriously, that the technology and that the attitude is being embraced by the Big Ten and by the member institutions. So that was pretty cool, I thought.
Well, that's good to hear. Most of the people that went to, like, SEC Media Days, I keep going back to what Holly and Spencer, you know, kept writing from there, and there was literally nothing going on other than, you know, just double talk and typical coach speak and Les Miles' hat. So to say that there's actually something, you know, of substance going on is nice. That it makes me think that, you know, maybe somewhere out there we might actually get some news.
No. There's no news. I mean,
don't rain on my parade, Dave.
There's no news whatsoever. I mean, the only thing that I can think of, you know, was news that was kind of created, like the whole Wolfolk and Forcier thing was kind of taken out of the ether. I mean, it was quotes that were fairly significantly far apart in the on the afternoon. And, I mean, nobody got the one thing that I think got lost in translation on that was Wolfolk's just a funny dude. Like, he's a nice guy. He talks very glibly, kind of, you know, makes some jokes as he goes along. And as you read that, he kind of sounds like a schmuck. But he's really not. He's a really nice guy. And a lot of the stuff just seems to get manufactured just to fill, you know, fill space.
Well, when I sense, and I don't read the Ann Arbor or the Detroit papers nearly as much as you do, I'm sure, but I get the sense that...
No, we read it about the same.
Okay. Well, I get the sense that there's even... We get a lot of that here just because of how important Iowa football is to the state at large, because there's nothing... There's no other pro teams here or anything like that. It's the Adrian Claiborne quote. We're the only team in the state that got him in so much trouble because Iowa State went, hey, how about us?
And about you.
Right. But Claiborne was saying, you know, there's no pro teams here. Iowa football acts as the pro team. But even with that, we don't seem to have quite as many people that have, like, a preconceived narrative that they would just want to fill as the Ann Arbor and Detroit press, which, whether real or perceived, seem to be doing that all the time.
Well, I mean, if that had happened in Ann Arbor, it would have read, you know, Claiborne says Iowa is new USC, something along those lines.
I mean,
it is what it is. But, you know, I mean, getting us from my own little personal bias aside, I mean, I didn't sense anything major really kind of come out of Big Ten Media Days. You know, it was everybody was pretty carefully scripted. I mean, everybody knew what the outcome was going to be of the various investigations. There were no real major reports of any other types of violations within the Big Ten that I'm aware of at Big Ten Media Days. No huge surprises about who was going to be injured or who wasn't going to play. So I think it was more for everybody to actually have a chance to see the other coaches and see the other players before the season started up.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing that really came out of it on Iowa's side was one rogue website, not us. They're probably not worthy of discussion as far as their actual name goes, although if you've been following me on Twitter, you know exactly who I'm talking about.
Follow him on Twitter.
Follow him on Twitter. Yes, follow me on Twitter. And I don't have Facebook. Anyway, one reporter for a certain website that will not be named started...
Website redacted.
Essentially rumor-mongering about 24 hours before Media Day started, saying that our defensive coordinator was going to retire after this season, that the hotshot local quarterback recruit was moving to linebacker. And so the only thing that Media Days really served for us was to get actual legitimate reporters to go to Ferentz and say, hey, is Norm Parker retiring? No, of course not. Is A.J. Darby moving to linebacker? Not as far as I know. And then we could all make fun of the website that will not be named and continue to this day. So really all it was there for was to shoot down rumors that had no basis in fact whatsoever.
Well, I mean, in that case, maybe we should start making our own rumors. I'd like to start a rumor that Adam Rittenberg, who is our upcoming guest, actually beat Nick Saban in arm wrestling once, just for fun. I don't think they've ever met, but...
Breaking news. Sources tell me that Adam Rittenberg beat Nick Saban in arm wrestling once. There. Done.
See? So, yeah, we'll just put that on the internet and everyone will run with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to tell you who my source is on that. But it's out there.
Somebody's out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, well, we're getting to the point now. Why don't we bring Adam in here? I'll do a quick little intro on him. Adam Rittenberg has been with ESPN.com for the past 3 years. Over the last 3 years, he has successfully covered the Big Ten probably better than anyone else in the country. He's written previously about Northwestern. He's written previously about Notre Dame. If there is a better source for Big Ten news out there, I really don't know what it is. Adam, thank you so much for joining us, and really looking forward to talking with you.
Absolutely. Big fan of your guys' blog, and thanks for having me on.
Well, one of the things I want to touch base with you to start with is there's been a lot of attrition around the Big Ten over the last 48 hours. Brandon Wager is in the process of kind of holding out. He thinks he's in the NFL. And from a Michigan perspective, what I'm curious about is what the heck's going on with Justin Turner. What I specifically want to know is Justin Turner's absence going to affect Michigan's secondary this year?
It only will if there's injuries. You know, by all accounts, it looks like J.T. Floyd is going to start opposite Troy Wolfolk at cornerback. Those are going to be Michigan's top two guys. But the problem is if one of them gets hurt or both of them get hurt, there's certainly less depth now than there was a few months ago when we thought he'd be in the mix, but one of the top-rated recruits in the Big Ten. So, you know, the fact that Michigan has lost now three pretty highly touted cornerback recruits in Dorsey, Turner, and Sissoko for various reasons. That just, you know, it's no one's fault, but they certainly could use some of that position after what's happened the last two seasons. So it won't affect Michigan too much if they can stay healthy, but they're probably going to have to lean even more on those fresh incoming freshmen, Cullen Christian and those guys.
Now, the other big potential player attrition story coming, it comes out of my neck of the woods. Brandon Wager, the former four-star recruit halfback, has kind of gone AWOL from Iowa's fall practice. Adam, you've been following the story. Is there any update, and what do you think is going to be the effect on the Iowa running game if Wager doesn't, in fact, return?
Well, I think there's a wait-and-see type of situation with Wager. There are a lot of rumors. Now, you know, In the offseason night before this happened, I'd gotten a couple emails that he might be leaving the team or is he leaving the team. So obviously he was at media day on Friday. Something clearly happened over the weekend to make him leave practice, and I think the situation is up in the air, but by no means do I think this is over. I think there's still a chance Weger could be back with the Hawkeyes before camp ends, and even if he's not, it's not the end of the world, although you know Iowa did struggle with getting running backs healthy last year, keeping a couple of them on the field, so it would put a little bit more pressure on Jewel Hampton and Adam Robinson to stay healthy.
Yes, the angry Iowa running back hating God could strike, but you know, you never count out Pocky O'Meara making an appearance for Iowa.
All right, can't forget about Pocky. I highly doubt you're going to see him starting a game for the Hawkeyes this fall.
The apocalypse, yes. Well, speaking of, you know, from running backs that are leaving to kind of running backs that are sticking around, one of the guys that I was honestly really surprised didn't get more preseason hype, if that's possible, is a guy named John Clay. He was left out for preseason player of the year. What's your take on Pryor over Clay as the preseason player of the year on offense?
Well, it made a little bit more sense than it did last year, but I still voted for Clay and think he should have been the offensive preseason player of the year just because he won the award last year. He should be even better, even though he went through some ankle surgery in the offseason, and that offensive line might be the best in the country. The Big Ten media embarrassed themselves, quite frankly, voting Clay a preseason player of the year last year on offense. It was really a terrible decision. This year it doesn't look as bad because of what he did in the Rose Bowl and showing me his potential for 2010, being a national awards candidate and so forth. But John Clay, to me, should have been the guy.
Now, the other big stories, other than player attrition and some of the stuff that came out of media day, have been mostly scheduling related. And we're, you know, still sitting on pins and needles waiting for the inevitable decision by Jim Delaney on what divisions we'll have for football in 2011 and beyond. But the other big story this week is the potential one-game meetup next year between Michigan and Alabama. It's kind of been up and down all week as to whether this is actually happening. Adam, is this the way that we're going to start seeing the kind of big non-conference games go, where it's going to be kind of a big payout from Jerry Jones or Dan Snyder or somebody else, and we'll all go to neutral fields?
Well, it certainly seems like that's becoming more popular, but I think with the nine-game conference schedule and the reluctance already of some of the bigger programs in the Big Ten to give up home games, I don't think it's going to be a major trend. I couldn't see Ohio State doing this very often or Penn State. Those home games are just so important to them. But it is interesting that Michigan is considering it, and we'll see if it happens. It looks likely. But it seems like, you know, with that stadium and some of the other venues around the country, you're definitely seeing some alternate approaches to scheduling, even in the Big Ten. Indiana basically selling a home game, going to play in Landover, Maryland against Penn State, which is going to basically be a Penn State home game. They've acknowledged that. So I'm not crazy about those things because it takes away from the great atmosphere of a home game in college football, but it's probably going to crop up here and there. I don't think it's going to be a major trend, though, in the Big Ten.
Well, I don't know. I mean, any time that Indiana plays a football game right now is pretty much a home game for the opposing side, but we'll leave that as it may.
Hey, but they had a major attendance increase last year. They were among the national leaders in attendance increase, but you're right for the most part.
Well, you know, they doubled it from 2 to 8. I was impressed by that.
Dave, you're mistaking Indiana for Northwestern.
Yes. No, that's silly me. Well, one of the other questions I want to ask about, since we're going into the scheduling, maybe I missed this, but I mean, are we actually going to see nine games next year or nine conference games next year? I mean, what's your feeling on that?
No, you will not see nine conference games next year, but you will see nine conference games in the future. Jim Delaney made that pretty clear, and I think it's an interesting, I think it was really the overlooked storyline at Big Ten Media Days was that proclamation. It's going to create some tension because a lot of coaches, Jim Tressel among them, Brett Bielema among them, don't like the possibility of going to nine conference games with the athletic directors who are under a lot of pressure, don't like paying those guarantees, and so forth, are definitely in favor of doing it. So Tom Osborne, Nebraska AD, who was at Big Ten meetings, said, for the most part, people are contracted out through 2014, so It might not be till 2015 when we see it, but Tim Delaney said he'd like to see it in the next 2 to 4 years. So you won't see it in 2011, but at some point in the near future after that, you will see a nine-conference game schedule.
Now, Adam, it wouldn't be an August in the conference if there weren't a couple quarterback controversies to deal with. It seems the biggest one of them all.
I don't know anything. Shut up.
Yeah, there's nothing in Michigan at all. We'll leave that for Dave to take care of. But the one that I'm interested in right now is Penn State, where Kevin Newsom was the heir apparent and now seems to be taking fire from all sides, whether it be former walk-on Matt McGloin or a couple of true freshmen who are getting in the race. What's your take on what might happen at Penn State as far as who's going to be taking the calling the signals this year?
Right, it's an interesting situation, very, very much wide open. I actually spoke to both Kevin Newsom and Matt McGloin just Thursday afternoon, and definitely came away a little bit different feeling from both guys. McGloin, very, very confident that he's made the most of his reps in practice and completion percentages up. He's making good decisions. He's showing good leadership. Newsom, you know, I asked him kind of what might make him stand out from the group, and he had a hard time answering. And he didn't seem that confident. Said it's been a tough camp, and it's been a real hard learning experience so far. So just from, you know, that's just one phone call, and I haven't seen him out on the practice field. But, you know, from people who have, you know, Dave Redson from the Big Ten Network was tweeting the other day about Robert Bolden, the true freshman. He wouldn't be surprised if he was the starting quarterback. So by no means is this Newsom's job. I think he's probably got to pick up his play a little bit in the next week or so to get in the position to cement that job. But I don't think we're going to see a decision here until much, much closer to their season opener.
Adam, when you were there at Penn State camp, did you said you didn't really see much of practice, but did it seem that Jones and Bolden were getting at least, you know, comparable snaps, or are they still sitting behind the two more experienced guys?
Right, yeah, I haven't actually been out to Penn State, but I've been talking to Newsom and McGloin. They said that all the reps are being divided completely equally, and guys are, you know, they won't know which team they're going to be practicing with. It could be the first team, second team, third team. So they're really rotating all four guys through all the spots they need to see them at, and right now the reps are equal. I think Jay Paterno, the quarterback's coach, wants to narrow it down to three from four probably by the weekend. So we could see that soon. But as far as the decision, you know, they didn't decide Darrell Clark over Pat Devlin a couple of years ago until somewhere around August 21st, 22nd. I think it could go even later this year, given all the, you know, so much inexperience you have at that position.
Well, speaking of questions with some of the Big Ten front runners like Penn State, well, the biggest question facing Wisconsin this year, which is kind of my dark horse, not even really a dark horse, my favorite to win the Big Ten this year, is their defense. They lost, you know, their leading sack getter. They've had a lot of attrition. Is that defense good enough for them to win the Big Ten this year?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, you know, they're not going to be a defense that will completely shut you down like Ohio State can or Iowa can or Penn State has been able to do the last 3 years. But they have playmakers. You know, J.J. Watt, a guy to watch on the defensive line, he quietly had something like 15 and a half tackles for loss last year. He can make plays. Chris Borland, the Big Ten Freshman of the Year, returns. You know, he made a ton of plays. Jay Belai is a hard hitter at safety. Devin Smith is a guy who had a couple of interceptions at cornerback. So I think they're going to need to win games by making plays, forcing turnovers, and you know, filling some gaps. Defensive tackles, one spot that concerns me a little bit. You know, even the safety spot with Belai and Aaron Henry, even though there's experience there, they're going to be working together for the first time. But Dave Doran, the defensive coordinator, is an excellent coach. This is a future head coach somewhere in college football, and he had a great, great game plan against Miami in the Champ Sports Bowl. So even though they do lose a couple of key parts, I think it's going to be a good enough unit if they can make some plays and force turnovers.
Now, David just talked about, you know, potential dark horses. My dark horse this year, oddly enough, is a team that I typically can't stand. Northwestern has at least the schedule in place to really, you know, put something together. Their first eight games seem eminently winnable. Adam, do you think that they're, with the talent that they've got on this team and you know, Persa coming back with a little bit of experience at quarterback, that they could, you know, possibly get a little bit of momentum, pull an upset or two and contend, or are they still looking at second tier?
Well, they've been right there on that cusp the last couple of years. You know, they lose a very, very productive quarterback in Mike Kafka, and they completely relied on him last year on offense. And I just don't think that they can go through another season without having any sort of running game. So it's going to be a big question mark whether they can generate a rushing attack. They have an experienced offensive line. They have a guy in RB Fields who I think can be a feature back in the Big Ten. And then on the defensive side, secondary, they lose, three multi-year starters, and that's a unit that until Mike Hanquist, the defensive coordinator, got there, was just awful. I mean, they could not stop anyone in the secondary. So can they reload there? They've shown that they can reload a quarterback. Can they reload in the secondary? Can they find a running back? But again, you mentioned that the schedule is favorable. On the other hand, they've had some favorable schedules, and they tend to lose a non-conference game almost every year, a bad one, whether it was Syracuse last year or Duke earlier in Patrick Jones' career. Only once since the 60s have they gone to the non-conference unscathed. So they can do that. I do like their chances, but there are a few question marks. The one thing that is working in their favor, though, after being at their media day earlier this week, is that they're a lot healthier than they were last year. In camp, they couldn't do a lot of hitting, and it really affected them early in the season. They didn't play well. They got lucky in some games. And they were a much better team down the stretch going undefeated in November.
Well, here's another question. Like, let me rephrase that question so I don't sound like I'm stumbling over my own tongue. But the other popular pick right now as a dark horse in the Big Ten is Purdue. They have an outstanding defensive end in Ryan Kerrigan. Everybody is very, very excited about Robert Marv coming in and taking over as the quarterback. Should we really be expecting that much out of Purdue in Danny Hope's second year? I mean, Robert Marv was awful at Miami. There's a reason he transferred. And is that defense good enough really to carry them to anything better than a December bowl?
Well, I have less concerns about Marv, actually, than I do the defense. You mentioned Kerrigan is outstanding, but they haven't stopped the run in 2 years. They've been last in the Big Ten in that category in 08 and 09, and they have a completely new-look secondary, so teams, if they aren't going to get these big rushing lanes, they're going to pick apart that secondary. So I am concerned on that side of the ball. Regarding Marv, he should fit much better with this offense. It's a spread offense. It's what he ran in high school. Their receiving core guys, I think, is going to be one of the real surprises in the Big Ten, one of the better groups out there. And so if they can block for Robert Marv with the offensive line, a couple of holes up front, I really think they're going to put up points. And that Notre Dame game in the beginning of the year could be a real shootout. So my main concern, much like they are with Michigan, much like they are with some of the other teams in the league, Indiana and so forth, are on the defensive side, not with Marv in the offense.
Well, we come to the part of the show that's dedicated to one of my favorite parlor games. The coaches that are on the hot seat going into the season, I don't think there's any doubt that you can say that Tim Brewster and Ron Zook are really desperate need of a quick turnaround. Some people are saying Rich Rodriguez. I'm not usually one to agree with them on that, but it could be a possibility. Bill Lynch to Indiana seem to be the four that get mentioned the most. Given the potential talent at Minnesota and Illinois and to a lesser extent at Michigan and Indiana, I'm saying lower talent on those teams than at Michigan and Indiana's a whole other ballgame, but who survives this year, Adam?
It's a great question. I think there's a pretty good chance Bill Lynch survives. The Indiana schedule is so easy. I mean, they're non-conference. If they don't go 4-0, they might launch him. But he has done a lot of good things to stabilize that program. They're recruiting better now than they ever have. And if they can just find a way to get to 6 wins, maybe 7 wins, get to a bowl game for just the second time since, 1993, it'll be fine. They don't want to make a change there. They have a new AD who wants to have contracts mean something again at Indiana and try to build some continuity. And as far as the other guys, I would say they're all on a pretty hot seat. Obviously, Zook amazingly survived last season, which was a disaster, made all these coaching changes in the offseason, and it's going to be a big experiment. That's what I've been kind of describing as at Illinois going into this year. And Minnesota, with Brewster, he came in talking about Big Ten championships and national championships, and it just hasn't happened. I mean, they've scheduled harder, which I appreciate. I think a lot of fans appreciate. But they haven't won games in November. They haven't won rivalry games. The same thing with Rodriguez. If Minnesota and Michigan don't get better throughout the course of the season, I don't think we're going to see these coaches back next year. Regarding Illinois, it was just amazing that they didn't make a change last year, so it's hard to know if they're going to do one this year. They were able to bring in some pretty high-priced coordinators for 2 years, so, you know, they're not in a great financial situation in the state of Illinois, as Dave and I know, so they might not be able to afford to do something. It's going to be very interesting. I would be stunned, however, if we don't see at least one coaching change after this year.
Well, I'd hate to lose Brewster and Zook because they're a source of immense joy to me. I think it's pretty likely we'll see one or the other gone by the end of the year. To quickly wrap up with you, Adam, who do you see as your potential top three at the end of the season?
Well, I'm pretty boring. I do like the three going into the year. With Ohio State, a pretty, clear national championship contender, a team with not a lot of holes on it. And then Iowa, again, offensive line is a position people are worried about, but they have a history of reloading there. And if they can defend their home turf, they're going to be going to a BCS bowl. And then Wisconsin, I really like their balance on offense. And we talked a little bit about the defense, but I think they'll have enough on that side of the ball to win 10 games or maybe 11 games. So those are my top three. And certainly after that, Michigan State, Penn State, kind of in that mix, maybe Northwestern, Purdue, Michigan, and then the bottom three teams are kind of right there with Indiana, Minnesota, and Illinois. But I definitely like the top three that most people do with Ohio State, Iowa, and Wisconsin.
Well, thank you again for coming on, Adam, and sharing your thoughts. And we'll remind our listeners that they can catch you, as always, at ESPN.com. Thanks again for joining us on the show.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me.
Take care.